webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all right.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Thank you, Robert Moore, and greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, June 30th, 2010, the only last day of June, 2010, in the history of humanity. Welcome in on this midweek edition. Glad to be back with you on our regular time spot after having the special pre-convention edition from Canada last week, and now we have... What?
Huh?
Maybe that was something just for me to hear that I just heard.
I heard.
We are happy to have you with us. We had the pre-convention webcast last Tuesday before the third annual Gospel Revolution Convention in Calgary, and now we have the post-mortem, if you will. The afterglow is still shining. It's gone all the way from Calgary, Alberta, to Houston, Texas, in the wake of Hurricane Alex is down there. Back in the home offices of the Gospel Revolution, please welcome online the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Good evening, Glenn.
Are you recovered yet?
You know, I have. It honestly, it did take a couple of days. but I think everything's back in normal mode, whatever that is, and been back in the gym a couple of times, and that kind of resets my clock and lets me know I'm back home. So, yeah.
Well, as most of you beautiful humans know, Michael endeavored to teach the entire book of Romans to the masses that were assembled at the Carriage House in Calgary, and we're happy to report, Michael, that you did succeed.
Mission accomplished. I am very pleased with what I've done when I teach. This time, on this entire teaching on the book of Romans, I was personally pleased with it all the way through. So, I'm usually a little bit more critical than others are of these things that I do, but a lot of times the things I thought, well, I was just, you know, I really didn't do a very good job on, that's what people seem to get more out of. So I don't know, this may be not all that good at all, because this one I enjoyed doing a lot. There's a tremendous amount of understanding that came out in the book of Romans that I have never taught on before. And three areas of the book of Romans, there was life that was found that I had never ever seen before, and everybody who heard this in context. And it really was the only reason that we were able to see these things, Glenn, is because of the really the forced guidelines of reading and teaching in context. And because of that, we really got...
I love that, the forced guidelines of having to read in context.
Yes, it absolutely is. And it is forced, and because the term that I coined more than a decade ago, less than two decades ago, may have been about 15 years, about that one of the biggest problems we had in the church was that we were verse damned. And I never will forget sharing that the first time in the church and seeing the mouths and the jaws hanging open and wondering what in the world I was even doing speaking in a church, which was probably my last time there. But I really do believe that we are verse damned as far as our understanding is damned. Our understanding is stuck, and we are tragically stuck with what we've been told because we do not know anything in context. We don't even know the verse before or the verse after, much less the chapter it's in, much less the book it's in, much less even the writer that has penned this. So so it was definitely it forced us to read and to teach and to understand it in context.
This is Glenn Klein Online, and we are inviting you to join us. We want to get an invitation out to you early this evening to get in on the conversation at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260 is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline. Sean is waiting in studio to take your call. We'll put you online with Michael and me as soon as possible, but we want to hear from you tonight at 1-800-436-3260. That is the number to call and to be part of the program. Perhaps some of you who have attended just the recent conference, the convention in Calgary, would like to join in, would like to hear from you with a question, a comment, an insight. Whatever you want to share, it is very vital to us that you participate in this effort at 1-800-436-3260. It's a few minutes after 9 o'clock on the East Coast of the good old U.S. of A., and if you're hearing this program at this time on Wednesday night, that means that you're listening live, and that means that you are very much wanted to participate in this effort. If you're listening at other times, you can email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. You can always email. You can email right now if you want. We do have some emails to get to. We want to talk a lot about what happened in Calgary, but you can always email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. So what was the biggest surprise that you had coming out of the convention?
As far as the teaching is concerned?
Well, you can take it any way you want, Michael.
I think my biggest surprise was the weather in Calgary was absolutely wonderful.
I knew it was going to be a weather issue. I knew that.
Oh, my. It was gorgeous in Calgary, Alberta.
Did you actually go outside the carriage house?
I did. I did venture out. I realized that I had packed insufficiently, and I needed to go buy a couple of shirts. So Vic, took me down to the shirt buying store. It was actually a great little store. I wound up buying 5 shirts. I wanted to buy lots more because it was just one of those places that had shirts that I really like. So, but it was just beautiful outside, and everybody there was enjoying their week of summertime. So I got there during Calgary's week of summer. So. It was nice, and then of course getting to see so many of the folks are. I'm always excited to see the Lethbridge group of our seniors that come up. They didn't get to come up for the entire thing, but they came up over the weekend, and still just as spry. They're just the sweetest people. Oh my gosh, and. So that was a highlight to me, and then of course with the teaching. The other thing is that all of the recordings are absolutely perfect. The sound quality on everything is absolutely perfect. Couldn't be any better. So that was awesome, and of course the other thing was the teaching itself. And of the things that came up, there was two in particular that were wonderful clarifications that I got that I had never seen before. Now there'll be a lot that the other folks who this is their first time to listen to something like this, it'll be just one thing right after the other. But I mean, for me personally, there was two areas of particular insight throughout Romans that was major. And, of course, the first one being in chapter 1. It was funny because I was going to teach all of chapter 1 by itself because it's so weighty. I thought, you know, and I wanted to show that as far as context is concerned, that for learning's sake, it should not end chapter 1 and then start chapter 2. That at least, you know, for learning purposes, because we do tend to kind of stop thought, start thought again when we go from chapter to chapter or from verse to verse, in fact. So I decided at the last minute, instead of teaching all, just one by itself, I decided to teach one and two together. So I narrowed that down, and that's what I started listening to, just chapter one and chapter two. I listen to teach in context. You have to listen and read in context. So I'd read through the whole thing, you know, context. I would find points, you know, that I could zero in on and study. And then I had my CDs, my Alexander Scorby King James Version CDs with me, and I was playing those on my laptop. And by listening in context, it just blew me away, because the whole thing about chapter 1 is dealing with that which is against nature. And, of course, the verses that are speaking about homosexuality, I knew that that in context, Paul is talking about something that was in stated under the Old Covenant. I didn't have any problem with Romans chapter 1. But I always wondered why Paul brought it up and so expounded on the act being against nature, and I just never understood why his emphasis on that. However, if you hang in there with Paul just a little bit, of course, what Paul begins to do is talking to the Gentiles, but he's talking to the Gentiles about the Jews. It's an amazing process, because Paul is teaching both Gentiles and Jews. And he's addressing one, then he addresses the other. He tears one completely down and then builds them back up to the Gentiles, tears the Gentiles down to the Jews, and then builds them back up to the Jews. Just to get everybody on the play field. It is amazing at Paul's skill when he teaches to get everybody on level ground. Well, lo and behold, I would have never drawn the analogy, but then didn't have to, because it's all right there. At the time you get into chapter 2, Paul is beginning to address the Jews about their own righteousness. And so he brings up the subject of circumcision. And he brings up that the fact that circumcision is by nature. It is, that is what is by nature, and he's letting the Jews know that uncircumcision is by nature, and that circumcision is totally against nature. So I realize, in the context of it, Paul is challenging the Jews about their condemnation for the unnatural act of homosexuality, when the very basis of their spirituality is rooted in the most unnatural act that has ever taken place on planet Earth.
Wait. You're telling me this, the sign of the covenant for Israel, the circumcision, you're claiming that's the most unnatural act that's ever occurred?
I'm saying that's what Paul was saying, and he was comparing it to the act of homosexuality. Being unnatural as it is, it's, you know, plumbing problems and things like that, if you will. But you talk about a plumbing problem, I mean, at least we didn't go messing with the plumbing anyway. But the act of circumcision, Paul is addressing their self-righteousness to condemn people which they speak of as being unnatural. Men with men or women with women, And then he turns right around and addresses the fact that you're condemning these people, yet this unnatural act of circumcision is the validation of your covenant, of which he said he was a part of.
Well, one thing for sure, this is indisputable that if God would not have instructed Abraham to circumcise all his men, and if that would not have been part of the law, nobody would have ever thought of that. That is a not a natural thought. Okay, here's what we're going to do today, guys, just for fun. We're going to cut off the tip of your penis. Attention, all Israel. But we know that there was no instruction either from God or anybody else to have people of the same sex engage in sexuality with each other. That seems, in my humble opinion, a hell of a lot more natural, if you will, than circumcision.
Well, based on desire, I would have to agree for sure. I just don't know of somebody who would participate in that willingly.
Could you imagine being Timothy? Now, remember, folks, one of the things that we enjoy most in this ministry and on this radio program is admitting that we were wrong. But could you imagine, and Paul had Timothy circumcised at the beginning of their experience together because he needed to be cleansed. He needed to show that he was covenantally acceptable to God.
Yep.
So he needed to be circumcised.
He sure
had
did.
To be baptized, which is a Jewish ritual. The baptismal comes from Judaism, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Absolutely.
It wasn't a Catholic thing. It wasn't a Baptist thing. That is a Jewish rite of cleansing.
Yeah. In fact, Paul called it the doctrine of washings.
Right. This is a very Jewish thing. Could you imagine being Timothy, having had, as an adult, a circumcised with no anesthesia? And by the way, Paul never said, take some wine for your circumcision's sake. Who knows if he even prescribed wine for Timothy. And then having his mentor stand up and teach that and come against the circumcision.
Yeah.
He probably wanted to kill him. I would pay to see that scene. I would love to see Timothy's face at that moment. What?
Yeah.
Dude, are you kidding me?
What's up? Yeah, no, it's true, and I think in light of the fact of just what we've brought out, that circumcision is far more unnatural than homosexuality, because at least homosexuality is something that people desire to do anyway. There is no desire to be circumcised.
And then, of course, out of the Jewish rite of circumcision comes the ultra, at least the Jews do it traditionally at 8 days,
right,
when the kid doesn't know what the heck's going on.
Right.
And then the Muslim culture takes that tradition and somehow comes up with this heinous act of female circumcision that we don't hear spoken about near enough.
Yeah.
Where the religious practice of slicing and mutilating a girl's clitoris at 12 years old, and then in many cultures, sewing up the girl's vagina to make sure that she is a virgin at marriage. You talk about something that is perverse and unnatural, thereby guaranteeing that people that are in that culture, we're talking probably, well, certainly we're talking hundreds of millions, if not a billion or more people, not being able to engage in sexual pleasure on a heterosexual basis, because you can't receive pleasure, obviously, if you don't have a clitoris if you're a woman, and you can't give pleasure if you're a man to your wife who doesn't have a clitoris or whose clitoris has been mutilated. Michael, one of the greatest evidences of religious practice and religious craziness is a repression of the human sexual experience.
Well, it certainly has been. I would have never come up with a comparison between circumcision and homosexuality, but I certainly am glad that Paul did. I thought it was brilliant that he would challenge their ability to condemn that which is against nature, and then bring up the little tiny fact that their very covenant is signified by that which is not natural. But it's thank goodness society is growing in spite of religion to embrace human sexuality, and there's things that are definitely changing, but and everyone will have different views on this for time and eternity, no doubt. But the issue for the gospel is that these are not gospel issues. That's the issue with the gospel. And that anyone, regardless of their sexuality, is absolutely holy and righteous and perfect in the eyes of God without fault and without blame. So this definitely is good news. It's definitely good news for the human race, no doubt.
We're going to be talking a lot about the teaching that came out of Calgary during this program and in, of course, many webcasts to come. We're going to be talking about how you can get a hold of the 11 CD sessions as well as the download feature that we're now offering. But we want to welcome online right now from beautiful Mount Vernon, Ohio, our good friend George Najjar. George!
Well, how are you guys doing?
We are doing wonderfully, my friend. It is a great pleasure to hear from you this evening. We know you've been going through quite a hellacious experience yourself with your son and his health issues, and there's so many people within the Gospel Revolution concerned about Anthony's condition, and how's he doing?
Anthony's doing well. I heard some bad things about Michael, though. I'm surprised he's still... I heard he got kicked out of his house and died of brain cancer. So he's still alive?
I'm here, George. I'm here.
Hey, wow. That's pretty cool. It's a miracle.
It is a miracle.
Anthony's doing... he's doing well, you know, relative to everything he's been through. It's been hard. It's been a journey. But
there are people, George, that know what Anthony's gone through. Do you want to share, just for those who have no clue at all what we're talking about, just briefly what he's been going through and how long you guys have been dealing with this for now?
Okay. I think I could do this quickly. About 3 months ago, he started bleeding from his rectum. And it wasn't just a little bit of blood, it was a lot of blood. And he didn't tell me for a few days, and then he developed a severe pain in his side, and I came home from work late one day, and he just was crying on the couch. This is a 15-year-old, 190-pound football player. And he was buckled over on the couch, and I immediately took him to the hospital. And it's been since then that we've never looked back. He bled from his rectum daily, 1 liter to 2 liters of blood every day for about 40 days, maybe more. Yeah, about 40 days. He was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis after the first, I'm going to say after the first 5 days. We were in the hospital for about 70-some days, 75 days, maybe 80 days. We just got out about a week and a half ago. And he went through some very hard times. We almost lost him a few times. With the loss of blood, he had over 30 blood transfusions. He's had 8 major surgeries, 3 of which were emergency 10-hour surgeries, and where they had to clean out his abdominal cavity from peritonitis, he had a subtotal colectomy, meaning that he still has a little stump in his rectum, but they took the entire rest of the colon out, 7 feet of colon out. He has an ostomy bag on his side. He's lost about 50 pounds. He's down to about 140. I don't know if my calculation is correct, but anyway, he's still in danger. In the time that we were there, the hospital we were at really didn't do the right thing at first, and it ended up with, after about 40 days of dealing with this, he was actually, out his colon, the lining of his colon. And finally they decided to do a colectomy. You know, I wish I knew, but anyway, I didn't. So I decided to do this colectomy where they removed the colon, and it was just too late. It was just too late. He went into a tailspin. We stayed in the hospital that whole 40 days, except for maybe 5 or 6 of them. He went into a tailspin, had this peritonitis, which is infection in your abdomen, and they had to do emergency clean out because your abdomen starts expanding very fast with bacteria, poison, and infection from leftover colon that they couldn't get out from the first emergency 10-hour surgery.
Well, you guys have been through hell and back. And,
you could say that, yeah.
And you guys who have listened to this program before and have heard George know that he has a long history in Christianity and is well-connected in the Christian community down there. And you've heard even us reference his situation. And, George, you referenced Michael's cancer scare that we talked about on last week's program. And you had a perspective going into this thing or in the middle of this thing about people wanting to reach out to pray for Anthony and to surround him and to activate prayer chains. And we had a tremendous conversation with Greg Amber last week about when Greg told me, in response to the news about what Michael was facing, to tell Michael he would not be praying for him. And out of that came the comment that praying for a particular result really speaks of tremendous desperation. And when I told you about that, that tripped a trigger in your heart. And please share with the beautiful humans about having the religious background that you do have, and now having had the gospel come in, how you all perceive the circumstance and how you've been persevering through it.
You made the statement, Glenn. I was sitting in the, I think it was when I was sitting in the lobby of the hospital, and you and I were talking. Maybe it was a different time, but you made the statement sometime that to not pray shows greater faith or strength and belief in God or something, however you said it, belief in God, I think you said, than having to pray. Well, the way I dealt with it is it was scary. It was, you know, when you're watching your son having one of the instances was a respiratory distress event, where he's just, his eyes are rolling back, his stomach's cut wide open, he's vibrating on the chair, screaming at the top of his lungs, and he's awake. He's about ready to die if they don't do something. You know, when you watch that, and you're looking at your son, and there's nothing you can do. You're totally and completely helpless. I refused. I thought of Mark 16, and I said, hell no. Just as they refused to believe in Jesus Christ, it was that strength, that much pop, that much conviction that I had. I don't care who's in here and what priest is trying to pray and who. I will not pray, because I trust that the light that is in that boy is going to save him or take him or whatever is going to happen. And I know as a father to say, well, take him. I mean, that's a hard thing to say. But the truth is I totally trust. And there were people that wanted to pray, and my ex-wife was there, and, you know, she was very timid. She goes, George, now, a couple of Pentecostal ministers are going to be coming up here. Could you just leave so you don't get in a fight with them? And I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not going to get in a fight with them. But I was in the room for a minute, and I actually made the statement that I said something like, there has never been a prayer that I prayed that actually came true. And I walked out. I said something like that. But anyway, there were people that I knew I was making enemies. I didn't mean to. I asked them not to pray. They were talking about doing prayer chains. And I'm telling you, there were probably a couple hundred churches that were praying for my son. And it didn't even make me feel better. I mean, there was no comfort in that at all. And I don't mean to stick anybody in the eye for what they're doing. That's their thing. But it just meant nothing to me. I totally and completely trusted in the light that lighteth every man. And that's all you can do. I mean, if you put yourself in that position and you start praying and hoping, nothing happens. He just kept getting worse and worse. I mean, I'm telling you that when we took him to another hospital and doctors are looking at the progressive decline in my son's life, you know, for that 3 months, they were like, how is he still alive? You know, it just was kept falling further and further. And we had people come in telling us, you know, God's going to take care of this. God's going to heal this. God's going to take... And every time someone came in and tried to give me this assurance, he just got worse. And it got to a point where I had to stand up just in myself and say, I am not going to pray. I mean, all these forces, you know, I don't believe in these, you know, evil forces or anything, but I felt I at that one moment, that was one of the last major issues, this respiratory distress event that occurred. I'm telling you, when you're watching your son die and you're sitting in a chair because you can't stand up, and you're sitting in the chair with your head down and there's 30 people beating on his chest and stuffing needles in him and putting masks on him and doing all these things, and you're just totally and completely hopeless. I didn't even think of praying at that point. I mean, I just kind of stood up and I was like, all right, let me see what's going on here. And I stood up and I watched.
Well,
Michael, that's all I could do.
With you, and for those of you who have not heard Michael's story about his brush with cancer, listen to last week's program on the 22nd of June. Tells the whole story. So you have, Michael, not gone through something like this recently with a child, which is, of course, so difficult. But, I mean, you were facing a life and death situation with your doctor, Michael, saying that to expect the worst was your doctor's prognosis before the test results came back benign, cancer-free. He said, expect the worst. And you had the same attitude as George did. Where does that come from, and why is that important?
Well, first off, let me say, you know, George, I would almost feel embarrassed to even compare what I went through compared to what you guys have and are still and will go through, and what your son will go through for the rest of his life. This is not a reversible situation. for him.
Right.
But I think what Glenn is getting at is the sentiment that was in my heart the same as it was in yours. You know, I think it's there because of the absolute assurance that that the work is complete. It's done. Whatever is done is done. And as I've shared with people in the last few months, my entire definition of hope has changed. I now have hope in all situations, but my issue, George, is that I don't define hope as attaching my expectations to a certain outcome. My definition of hope anymore is that whatever the outcome, I know I'm going to be okay, regardless. And I know that whoever is in my life, my family, that regardless of the outcome, they're going to be okay. There's life on the other side of every tragedy. Even if the tragedy is death, there's life on the other side of that tragedy. You know, it's really strange because, I mean, when the doctor told me to expect the worst, I did. Now, I know in our Word of Faith days, you know what that would have done. That would have caused the devil to be able to come in, and because I did what the doctor said instead of refused what the doctor said. But I did what the doctor said, and there was four people in my life that knew what the doctor had told me. So I told them, and so we were all expecting the worst. However, knowing that it all could be wrong at the same time. But I don't know. There's just a peace. I think there's just a peace with life, with its outcome. I never will forget the first time I stood up in a Word of Faith church and addressed this whole issue of praying for things specifically and claiming this and claiming that and confessing this and that. And I remember I yelled out in the church, I said, I want to say something that everybody here in this, within the range of my voice, everybody here wants to say. And George, I yelled out loud from that pulpit, it don't work. And it was like a relief came over everybody. And then before it was over, I had the entire congregation chanting together, it don't work. And so it was a great release. And I've known all of these years, it don't work. And I know the pain of telling people it does work. And the delusion that even when things turn out better than you expected them because you prayed, it throws you into a loop. You know, if... I tell you what, if I am not so stupid as to say that if I really believe that praying about certain things works, if I really believed that, I would do it. I mean, who would not? But the thing of it is that I've noticed that after I stopped confessing my sins, my obsession with things having to turn out a certain way, when they realized that there wasn't a sin issue, all of these things are connected together. But you just come to peace with yourself and with life and its outcomes, and you feel and know that you are cared for. You feel and you know that the outcome of particular situations does not determine your relationship with God. And I understand your passion when you refused to pray. I so understand that, because you don't want to get caught back in that loop again. You know that if you do pray and you pray specifically and it turns out right. See, if I would have had myself and the four people in my life that knew about this praying for a good result, my gosh, we would have dove headlong into another whole, no telling how many years of self-righteousness. And but we all agreed with the doctor that it was to expect the worst, and it was just the opposite. It was benign. There were no cancer cells at all. I was in shock. Glenn was in shock. It's the first time I've heard Glenn speechless ever.
And but it really is the fight that you've been through, I believe, is the true fight of faith. It is not the fight that has an expectation attached to it. Your fight of faith was saying that regardless of this outcome, I know who my son belongs to. I know who he is, and I know who I am, and I know who my family is, and regardless of how this circumstance turns out, this stands firm. So,
well, Michael, thank you for saying all that. Glenn, can I talk a little bit here? Did you want to say something?
Hey, George, okay. can you hang on for a minute?
Sure.
You got a few more minutes. We got to take a break now, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be back. We're going to continue with George Najjar, Mike Williams, Glenn Klein online. We've got a spot that we want to play for you to inform you of a offer that we think you're going to want to take advantage of. And then we'll be back right after continuing with George Najjar from Ohio as we continue on this Wednesday night, Glenn Klein online.
Folks, the world was not, quote, going to hell because of what the world did. The world was going to hell because of what somebody else did. The preaching of the gospel makes no one righteous. It reveals the righteousness that you already have. The reason the blood of Christ only covers transgressions under the First Testament is because that's the only place where transgression existed. Everyone has been made righteous. But you've got righteousness you didn't ask for, righteousness you didn't even believe for. You might say, well, I'm an atheist. Well, welcome. You're an atheist that's on your way to heaven. This is clear, sound doctrine in every Bible school that is on the face of this planet that teaches any form of Christianity.
The statements you just heard are from the Northern Midwest Conference in the teaching series, Spiritual Understanding, the Knowledge of God. James Pep Washburn writes, "Tonight was probably the most powerful presentation of the real gospel that I have ever heard. This is no exaggeration. The guy was absolutely firing on all cylinders tonight. He was in afterburner mode. No loose ends. Amazing." This 3-CD series is available for $24 plus shipping and handling, or in a downloadable audiobook for $12. Order your copy of the CDs or download at gospelrevolution.com today.
That's available for you folks. If that doesn't intrigue you, I don't know what will. Gospelrevolution.com on the homepage. Just go there. You can download. You can order. And that is for Michael's recent trip up to central Wisconsin at the Upper Midwest Gospel Conference. We're talking with George Najjar this evening from Mount Vernon, Ohio, about the trials and tribulations that he's been facing in his life and how, frankly, the gospel resident in his heart has affected his perspective. You know, one of the things, George, that I realize, and I've heard Michael say the same thing that you said before the break, which was you've never had a prayer answered. If prayers were answered, Benny Hinn would not be getting divorced right now. Rodney Howard Brown's daughter would not have died. These are people that had potentially millions of people praying for them. And the result and the outcome that they were hoping for did not occur. And there is something about the strength of the gospel that allows somebody that's going through the circumstance that you are with your son right now to say, as Michael said, I know who he is, I know who he belongs to, and that is not only good enough, that's as good as it's going to get.
Well put. Yes, as if millions of carbon units begging a deity is going to change anything. Michael, when I hear about the mind games that prayer can you know, it wreaks havoc on the human mind because it separates the reality for that person. It's just my opinion, I'm not a psychologist, but in my life it had separated reality from me, and it allowed me to be a flunky while I trusted in, you know, some external deity to you know, perform a trick for me. And it just, you know, I as the days went on, I never played a mind game with myself one time. And I like your idea of hope, your definition of hope, because the way it's been used, that word along with faith, you know, faith, I think the greatest definition of faith is just that you believe there's a creator. You know, faith doesn't make trees jump off the land and dance in the ocean. Jesus said that if we even had that much faith, a little tiny bit of faith, we could do that, and we don't. So whatever that faith he's talking about is not the faith that we have. So whatever.
Absolutely.
So I spent so much time, you know, just it wasn't hard to refuse these things. It was really pretty simple because it was a flow. It seemed, even at the worst of times, that there was still a flow. And one of the verses that, you know, kept coming to me was the spirit of man is the candlestick of God. And if our spirit is the candlestick of God, so that must mean that there's some kind of darkness that God needs a candlestick for, to light. And if he's having a human experience through us, and I'm not stomping on anyone's theology, but if he's having a human experience through us, whether it's pain, suffering, homosexuality, straightness, whatever the issue is that he's experiencing, then I have to let him do it. I got to stand back and say, okay, I mean, experience. If that's what you want, do it.
Mike, one of the things that was so amazing about the process that we went through when we thought that you had at least melanoma, if not, you know, a worse form of cancer, was you actually articulated to me an excitement. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this was not ginned up. This was not manufactured. Michael and I are very frank with each other. I mean, needless to say. you were actually anticipating an experience that was coming that you never had had before.
Yeah, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, Paul's teaching about the trying of our faith is more precious than that of silver and that of gold. And I know in my heart, George, that my little micro situation and hearing, you know, expect the worst. I do believe these situations are a trying of our faith, but here it is. If it's a trial of our faith, what is the temptation of that trial? And I think that the temptation of that trial is to try to invoke any type of spiritual process to try to get the situation to change. Now, I know that's what happened to me. I hear what you're saying. We did not collaborate on these two issues. Again, to even compare mine to what you guys went through is not even on the same planet. But it was the same process, actually, because the trying of our faith was the temptation attached to it would have been to try to become spiritual enough, whether the prayer was prayed right, to the right way, in the name of Jesus, or in the name of the Father, in Jesus' name, to the Father in Jesus' name, or to Jesus, or in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, or, you know, do you ask with confidence? And all of these things begin to come back of the teaching that you and I went through. You know, and then you've got to be very specific about your prayer. You can't be vague about your prayer, and you can't ask amiss, because then it's, you know, because you're asking to consume it upon your own lust, and the list goes on and on and on. Have I got all the sin out of my life? Is there a reason God won't answer my prayers? For me, the temptation to go back into that whole arena is the temptation that I went through. That was the trying of my faith, was that, okay, am I truly free from this superficial spirituality? Do I truly believe that that which is spiritual took place 2,000 years ago? Am I free from thinking that that which is spiritual is something taking place today? Is this just life? And is it life infused with God's life, light, and power, even as you said, that you believe was in your son? Is that there because of what happened 2,000 years ago, or is there something I must invoke? Well, let me tell you, for me, that was the trying of my faith. And, of course, this wasn't as nearly as the type of situation as yours, as I've said. I can't stop saying it because I mean, to compare these two is just ridiculous in my mind. But, like I said, the process was the same. But I think it was the trial of our faith. And I think that what you come out with is something that is more precious than that of gold and of silver. And you come out with a stability that you're not relying on some superficial spiritual act. You're still relying totally and solely on what took place 2,000 years ago in the body of Jesus Christ, the life, death, burial, and resurrection. And that truth is what has life in us now. And whatever that life does and wherever that life takes me, that's where I'm going. So,
well, I'm glad I'm not alone in thinking a lot of the things you've just spoke about. So we just keep going on, you know, and we just keep going on and living life. Can I change the subject back to something you were talking about earlier?
Yes, please.
You done with this one, Glenn?
For the moment.
Okay.
Glenn's never
and
done
I'm,
with him.
And I'm really thankful to Greg, who I never met and never spoke to, but he got what I was saying. I just posted a few things on Facebook, very, very little, and he got it, and he spoke about it. I'm really honored. Anyway, you were talking about Romans and homosexuality and how circumcision was the really true unnatural aspect. But anyway, you know, society seems to be evolving, whether or not religion is trying to stomp us down.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, there's a word that young people are starting to use, and it's creepy. And you know, there's been abuse in my family generations ago, and it seems that as the generations come. And then, of course, there's a generation after me, my nephews and stuff, and nieces, and then even a grandson. But as the generations come, it just seems that there are less, that people are smarter. And just in normal life and in normal conversation, you can tell if someone's being creepy. If they're, you know, you can tell if there's something strange generally, you know, about that person, if they're, you know, maybe, you know, some kind of child abuser or doing something that's creepy. But in my observations of my, you know, my kids and their friends, who they have tons of friends, I don't hear creepy being applied to homosexuality. I hear it being applied to, like, older people who are, you know, trying to stalk older men, trying to stalk younger girls, or just being socially unacceptable. And homosexuality, it seems, more and more, it is not an unacceptable aspect of society. What do you think?
I'll tell you something that was creepy. I came across something that I posted on the Friends of Mike Williams, the Gospel Revolution Facebook, that there was a survey in the state of Maine
amongst a so-called pro-family group that they felt that the oil spill here in the Gulf of Mexico was better for the country if they had a choice than if gay marriage would be adopted. Now that's creepy.
Yeah, that is creepy. You know, that's creepy when people put. It's creepy when people put finances, basically, against something that is, you know, natural, and it just, you know, subdues, you know, a natural aspect. I don't know. I just think society is not deeming homosexuality as creepy. Until you get to those places like Maine.
I think you're right. I think that for society, homosexuality has made it out of the creepy category, as you're saying, and that in spite of where the church is. But you know what? The church has evolved by coercion after society already has evolved to where that the church is no longer going to benefit from taking that stand. But it is of the evolutionary process of acceptance and of gaining understanding. The church has been the tail end of everything, if they ever come along at all. But issues such as slavery and women's rights,
driving cars, internet, TV,
telephones,
anything.
Yeah, the list would just never cease.
Rock and roll music,
and then they jump in, and then they are the ones who are implementing all of these things more than anybody else is. And but yes, I agree with you. I think that in society, I had the pleasure of being in Canada. It is a little bit a little strange being in Canada, knowing that there's complete equal rights for the gay community there in Canada, as far as equal rights about marriage or employment or any of those things, and it just almost feels like the air breathes just a bit differently, you know, than to be.
Well, I can tell you guys that there was a great manifestation of what George is talking about last week. As you beautiful humans know, I'm a big sports fan, and we've got a lot of hockey fans in Canada that listen to this program and that support the Gospel Revolution, and that the Chicago Blackhawks won the championship in the National Hockey League and won the Stanley Cup. Well, last week, all over the world, there were gay pride parades in major cities all over the planet, including here in St. Petersburg, Florida. And in Chicago, they had a big gay pride parade. And Brett Sopel, defenseman for the Blackhawks, was in the gay pride parade with the Stanley Cup in honor of one of his gay friends who had passed away. And for a major professional athlete to have anything to do in a positive way with the gay community, there is no major pro athlete on the planet who has come out as gay. Now, I mean, you're talking about in baseball, soccer, football, hockey, basketball, tennis, track and field. I mean, you're talking about every sport that you could think of, golf, who has come out as a gay man or woman who is currently performing. We have guys and women who are now retired. So this is a huge issue. And for him to embrace the gay community with the Stanley Cup in Chicago, it is a huge step forward. And a very great evidence George, of what you're talking about. I got to tell you guys, I feel privileged tonight, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up anybody's butt by any means, or patronizing with this comment. I feel privileged to be on the program with you two gentlemen, who I think not only humanize the Gospel Revolution, but totally demonstrate the power of the gospel, in my opinion. This gospel is real, ladies and gentlemen. This is a powerful, the most powerful force in the universe, so much so to the saving of our souls. And you guys are an inspiration. And George, I cannot thank you enough for including us in your life and for sharing your experience. And, of course, we wish Anthony a quick recovery. But regardless of how quick or slow it is, we're here for you, brother. We love you, and I can't wait to get with you in person at some point. Here's a guy, ladies and gentlemen, that we have never met, and yet we feel so bonded to and so connected to. And I hope you guys feel that in Ohio, George.
Glenn, I'm speechless. Thank you very much. I'm just speechless. I love you guys, and I'm very, very grateful for where I am. I'm just grateful. I just wish that I never heard of religion, because then I wouldn't have had to deal with all of this. You know.
No, I understand. It's screwed up, dude. There's no doubt about it.
We should do that. Should be our slogan. Religion. Wish I never heard of it.
Yeah.
But listen, I love you guys, and thank you so very much for letting me on.
We love you, George.
Michael,
we're with you all the way.
All right, there's George Najjar, ladies and gentlemen. I'm blown away, Michael. I'm just absolutely blown away. And for the people that are in our listening audience that have children, like you and I do, you could only imagine what that's like, especially in light of George's and our experience in religion. I got to tell you, I was tempted to pray. I wanted to pray for him.
Yeah.
I wanted to do something. But it is so freaking fruitless. It is such a... It's a travesty. It's like trying to throw up something against the wall and see if it'll stick. You talk about something that is witchcraft.
Well, I think George's reference to those verses that the people in the quote faith community, they are not of faith at all. But they teach those verses that Jesus talked about having faith as a grain of mustard seed. And you know, and then people will go to Israel and get a little, they sell you a necklace with a little tiny grain of mustard seed, and it's like no bigger than a speck of sand. The first mustard seed I think that I saw was quite impressive, because it had to be worn inside of a little glass necklace to where that you could even see it at all, actually. But and George was absolutely correct that Jesus said, if you had faith, even as big as a grain of mustard seed, you could talk to a tree and tell it to be plucked up and go jump in the sea, and it would obey you. If you had faith, even as the size of a grain of mustard seed, the smallest seed known that I understand, he said that you could tell this mountain to be removed into the sea. What Jesus was teaching is that human beings don't have it. He wasn't teaching us how powerful it is if we just got a little of it. He's trying to teach us human beings don't have it. Forget it. I mean, we are not the ones who are to have the faith. The faith that the human race needed was manifested in Jesus Christ. That faith was manifested and took him all the way through death, burial, and resurrection. And that's the only faith that I rely on. My faith has nothing to do with what's going to happen in the outcome of any certain situation in my life. I live by the faith of the Son of God.
Yes.
Because I do not have faith. I don't have it. I'm not even claiming to have it. Because if Jesus was correct, if I have any at all, I could talk to trees and mountains and tell them what to do. And, you know, when I first started teaching on that in that light many years ago in a Word of Faith church, I told people, you know, I woke up in the hotel room, and this actually had happened right before I taught on this. I woke up, and there was a the room was totally dark, and there was a shaft of light coming in between the curtains that had not closed completely. Everybody knows no motel curtain closes completely. And but the shaft of light was casting right across the desk, and there was a pencil, you know, how many ever sides of, you know, five-sided pencil that was laying there. And the moment that I came conscious, that verse came into my head, if you had faith as a grain of mustard seed, you could say to this mountain, be thou removed and be thou cast into the sea. And if you don't doubt in your heart, but believe that those things which you say shall come to pass, you shall have whatsoever you sayeth. And suddenly I'm awakened into that reality of that verse boiling through my being, and the shaft of light coming across the desk, and I saw the pencil there, and I said, forget the mountain. I can't even make that pencil roll over one time of one of its five sides. I can't even get a pencil to move. And that's when I got it. Jesus was not teaching us what kind of faith we could have. He was teaching us the kind of faith we don't have and never would. And to be freed from our own faith is the most powerful thing that has ever happened in my life. I got set free from my own faith. I rely totally on the faith of the Son of God. And I don't rely on his faith to change things. I rely on his faith that has presented me spotless and holy and without blame, and that there is no situation in my life that is indicative of my stance with God. Whether it is my sexuality, my condition of my health, whether I have cancer, don't have cancer, suffering with cancer, dying with cancer, get healed of cancer or not. None of these things are indicative of who I am. And it is as Jesus was tempted in the garden. Jesus was tempted. He showed us what the true battle of life is. The battle of life is not about cancer. It's not about whether we live or die. It's while we're here that we can believe that we are the sons of God. That is the battle. And the only way I can accept that I am righteous and holy before God is to rely on the faith of Jesus Christ. Because I have none, Glenn. I cannot tell you how blessed I am to know I have no faith. I don't have any. I don't want any. I wouldn't know what to do with it if I had it. But I know what I do have, and that is confidence that has become so great that no matter what happens, I know I'm going to be okay. I know
that.
There
is a manifestation of peace and a stability of the heart that comes through the meditation of that reality.
Yeah.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the power of God.
Yeah.
Not whether we get healed, not whether we have a financial breakthrough, not whether or not abortion is stopped or gay marriage is stopped or Anything else?
Yeah.
It's our ability to cope in a rational, vital, mental disposition in this life. That is spiritual gift.
Yeah, it definitely is.
I'm going to ask Sean to fire up that spot one more time, because I've got a question I want to ask you about it, Michael. And it's a great spot that Robert Moore did.
That Robert's a good guy.
What?
That Robert's a good guy.
He's doing a great job under the tutelage of Jeffrey Robertson.
Yep.
And Sean, just fire that up. I want to hear that again, and I got a question for Michael.
Folks, the world was not, quote, going to hell because of what the world did. The world was going to hell because of what somebody else did. The preaching of the gospel makes no one righteous. It reveals the righteousness that you already have. The reason the blood of Christ only covers transgressions under the First Testament is because that's the only place where transgression existed. Everyone has been made righteous. You've got righteousness you didn't ask for, righteousness you didn't even believe for. You might say, well, I'm an atheist. Well, welcome. You're an atheist that's on your way to heaven. This is clear, sound doctrine in every Bible school that is on the face of this planet that teaches any form of Christianity.
The statements you just heard are from the Northern Midwest Conference in the teaching series, Spiritual Understanding, the Knowledge of God. James Pep Washburn writes, tonight was probably the most powerful presentation of the real gospel that I have ever heard. This is no exaggeration. The guy was absolutely firing on all cylinders tonight. He was in afterburner mode. No loose ends. Amazing. This 3-CD series is available for $24 plus shipping and handling, or in a downloadable audiobook for $12. Order your copy of the CDs or download at gospelrevolution.com today.
Well, first of all, that's going to intrigue a lot of you beautiful humans to get online and either download that series or order it via CD. But right at the end there, Michael, you said that this doctrine is completely acceptable in every church and every Bible school. I'm paraphrasing here, of course, on the face of the earth. What did you mean by that?
Well,
was that taken out of context?
Actually, that's out of context just a little bit, and I think we actually need to tweak that. It's a beautiful spot. I love it. But that needs to come right after, unless I'm missing something, because I know that's been the question I had. But those comments actually came right after me teaching that the world was going to hell because of what one man did. That doctrine is taught in every church and every Bible school.
Uh-huh.
That one man, because of one man's sin, all were made sinners. Now, of course, then they spread that out all over the place, but the fact that one man was the problem in bringing sin into the world is taught in virtually every form of church and Bible school that I know of.
Right. Okay. Well, that's something that we'll address. But definitely wanted to. I did notice that. And
yeah, I did too. I just haven't had a chance to make mention of it yet.
That's right. It's a great spot. Thanks, Robert. That just went out today. That commercial and the download and the CD is available. We've had many, many orders already, and you are going to want to for sure take advantage of that, as well as the upcoming book of Romans teaching from Calgary. We're going to be touched, as we always are, about how you can access all that. We are over time tonight on Glenn Klein Online. Glad to have you along with us. Hope you are enjoying the webcast. We do want to get to our next and last caller of the evening. I don't even know where he's calling from, but we're always happy to hear from him from boldgrace.com, our good buddy George Howell. George!
Hey, glory to God, hallelujah, glory to God, thank you, Jesus.
Georgie Poo.
How you doing, Michael?
I'm good, George, how are you? My dear brother.
I talked to Glenn this week. I told him, I said,
you guys put on a hell of a show last week.
Very good way to describe it.
I went through, and I'm sure you know, it's nothing for you guys, but I went through a whole range of emotion in 25 minutes of total depression to total elation, and it made me wonder, Mike, when you're gone, who's going to carry on the message?
Well, I think we know the answer to that. Listen, as long as George Howell's here, I don't have any concerns whatsoever.
Yeah, but I'm just about the same age you are, Mike, so...
Well, here's the thing, folks, that I just heard this on the news yesterday, and that is if you make it to 65, you have, I believe they said, an 80% chance of making it to 95.
Oh, Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we're not quite there yet. I mean, some of us are there, but...
Well, I just wanted to call in. I'm in an undisclosed location in Ohio tonight.
Oh, you're it's a big night for Georges in Ohio on the webcast.
Actually, I'm on the Ohio-West Virginia border tonight. But I just got in from work, and I wanted to say that the word for tonight is download.
Yeah.
I am so excited about Mike's teachings being available for download instead of, you know, I like instant gratification. And downloads really give it to me.
You're fine.
And I hope that the Gospel Revolution begins to make all of Mike's teachings available by download. I just finished downloading the one that was advertised today.
Awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, well, let us know what you think about it then.
I haven't started listening to it yet, but Mike, if it's you, I know what I think of it.
Well, thank you, George.
Listen, everything's clear with you, Mike, as far as you know now?
Yes, I am. I am sickeningly healthy.
All right. Well, I wanted to call in and tell you guys that last week was a real roller coaster. I told Glenn when I called him this week. I said, "Thanks for the roller coaster ride." And you guys are real pros because you brought the audience along, and just when the audience was ready to fall off the edge, you pulled them back, and it was really a good show.
I have to drop back and concede to the brains behind this broadcast operation. That's Glenn Klein. I would have never had the savvy to pull that off. That's for sure. So I was along for the ride too. This was a Glenn Klein special. That's for sure.
Are you saying that I'm a master manipulator? Is that what you're trying to say, Mike?
You did it better than anybody could have done that story, Glenn.
If I didn't know better, Glenn, I would say you were probably a preacher at one time.
Yeah, I still am a preacher.
Yeah,
preacher of good news now.
Exactly. Well, guys, I'm going to let you guys
know. George is coming down to the Gulf Coast next month, Michael.
Yes, I am.
He's going to be visiting here in the Tampa Bay region.
Oh, that's awesome.
I just hope that the tarballs aren't there by the time we get there.
Well, you know, I'm like they did at Woodstock and yelled for no rain, I'm yelling for no oil. But I will not pray.
No, I'm not going to pray either. I told my wife, I said, either way, even if the beaches are completely brown with oil, it'll be something we've never experienced.
That's a great attitude. Well, I can tell you that the beaches in Florida, at least on the West Coast here, are beautiful.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's not true for other regions of the Gulf Coast. So what a debacle that whole thing is. Of course, the church is trying to, you know, apply spiritual things to this accident and disaster that has occurred, but we'll look forward to seeing you down here. It's going to be a great time, George.
Okay, love
Take
you
care
guys.
Of yourself, George.
Thanks
for
calling,
brother. Talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Right, bye.
Here's George Howell. BoldGrace.com is his website. On the road, as he often is, ironically in Ohio tonight, down by the West Virginia border. Well, we got people all over the world listening. And, you know, Michael, I have such a kinship with these guys. And on George's last trip down here, George Howell, I met him for the first time after obviously having spoken with him on so many occasions.
Oh, yeah.
We have never met George and the Jar face-to-face.
No, that's right.
And yet there is such a kinship. There's such a oneness amongst our friends and our people, if you will. It's a beautiful thing. It really is.
Family.
It touches me. It inspires me.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
And they're great people. And it doesn't make a difference whether they're in Canada or in Hong Kong or in Australia or in the United States or in the Caribbean or in Africa or in Europe. We've got people all over the planet. There's not a lot of us yet, but the numbers are growing. And I think, Michael, that as George Najjar was alluding to about the issue of homosexuality, I just think that that is an example of what is starting to permeate the earth that this, frankly, at the core, this revolution is all about.
Yeah, no, that, I think that's very true. Definitely is. It's a radical change. We're not talking about small adjustments. You know, when Jesus came to do away with the law, he said he came to lay the axe to the root. He didn't come to rearrange the fruit on the tree. And I believe that the impact of this gospel is to that drastic of a situation to where that, you know, the things that I teach and preach and share, they are not designed to rearrange the fruit on the tree. It's to lay the axe to the root.
Yeah, if there's any evidence that we need for that is our discussion tonight. I mean, you talk about a radical departure from where we were on issues of life, vis-a-vis our ability to manipulate and control things that are just part of life.
Yeah.
This is a radical departure, and we're proud to be a part of it. I mean, we are just thrilled.
Absolutely.
And so, stay in touch, folks, with us. We will be in touch with these downloads and the information. I want to remind you that Michael is available to come to your area. No convention is necessary. Any kind of group, the series that you guys will be enjoying on the downloads or via the CDs that were done in Marshfield. How many people were there in central Wisconsin? About 10?
About that. I'm not real sure.
So this is how a revolution starts, folks. It starts with a small group of people. You can have Michael come to your area for a small group. Same thing with the Southeastern Conference that was done in Georgia. This is a small group of people that are uniting around the world. And all you got to do is get in touch with us at gospelrevolution.com. You can email at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. And you'd be surprised how we're looking for venues for Michael to come and share. It does not have to be a large group of people, and it does not cost hardly anything at all. But we do need people who desire to share this message with their family, with their neighbors, with their friends. And just email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com and get in touch with Jeff and make this thing happen. We got an entire summer ahead of us yet. With opportunities for Michael to go wheresoever he will, which is anywhere, to share this message of the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. Well, we're glad that you're back in the saddle down there and that you're recovering, and we'll do it again next week.
Absolutely, and again, you know, reassure the Najjar family that they have a much bigger family that loves them and cares about them, and we're hanging in there with them.
Exactly right. Want to thank Sean O'Halloran for everything he does in studio for the webcast, engineering, producing, call screening, doing a great job. Thanks to Robert Morgan for his production help. And for Jeff Robertson, the administrator extraordinaire,
who is doing so much for this effort. Thank you for listening. Thank you for contributing and for participating and for sharing. Until we talk again next week, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!